Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. Today, I'm very excited to have special guest Scott McNeil from Gibson McNeil Lawyers talk to me today about business succession planning. I've known Scott for a couple of years now. We started our firms at around the same time, and he focuses mainly on commercial work. So I really wanted to get his views on business succession planning and get some new ideas of things that people should think about when they're considering their business succession. So I hope you enjoy listening. It's a really good conversation, really good episode. I learned quite a bit from Scott, and particularly one new thing which I hadn't heard about, which was really exciting. So thank you for listening and continuing our great June theme of business succession planning. Well, thank you, Scott McNeil from Gibson McNeil Lawyers, for joining me today on the podcast. So what I wanted to start with, Scott, is just a bit of background. How did you end up with your firm? What's your specialty? What are you doing day in, day out?
Hi, Lydia. Thank you for having me. That's a lot of questions to remember. So I started the firm Gibson McNeil Lawyers 3 years ago. I came out of an unusual direction from working in-house to returning to the private practice segment. And I was wanting to leverage on my skills that I'd developed in-house and bring them to the private practice industry. And I thought the best way to do that was to, rather than pigeonhole myself into a particular type of practice, which is typical in working for the larger firms or in private practice generally, I thought the best method to do that was to establish my own firm where I could work on matters of broader interest to me personally, and I could do things broader than just corporate law or commercial law or litigation, and I could incorporate some of my skills and experience, but also some of my hobbies as well.
What kind of hobbies? Oh, I know. Golf.
Golf. Golf is a big one, and it has projected from a hobby into a profession, not as a professional player, of course, but as a professional legal advisor for a very, very exciting golf course development in King Island in Tasmania. So yes, when I said that, I had in my mind my love of sports, and to integrate my passion for sport and my expertise in the legal sector.
Perfect. Now, I guess for listeners, because they don't know, we met through a mutual friend and we have a lot of synergies because Scott does all the commercial stuff that I do not want to do and don't want to touch. And then I do kind of the estate planning side for a lot of his clients. So we've worked together on, we have quite a few mutual clients and cross referrals. So what we're talking about in the month of June is business succession planning. Now, what I find is that a lot of my clients really come to me, talk about their estate plan, they understand their personal estate, what they want to do, but have not thought about business succession planning. And for the benefit of most of the listeners, it's really for that kind of sole director, sole secretary, proprietary company that they just really haven't thought about. So in terms of business succession, when do you think it is a good time for people to think about it? And what would you recommend that they do in terms of taking steps to think about succession?
Yeah, they're excellent questions, Lydia. And my advice is always to think of if you are a business owner or you are involved in a business, to pretty much immediately start considering those particular concepts of succession in business. And the reason for that is the documentation that surrounds the establishment of a business, people tend to overlook them and not contemplate the specific nature of those arrangements for their own particular circumstances. And what I mean by that is the usual course of buying a business would involve going to an accountant or potentially your lawyer and asking your accountant or lawyer to set up a company structure. And that's good advice to do that so that you remove an element of personal liability and potentially a corporate trustee and a what we call bucket companies or holding companies to distribute the proceeds of the business in a tax efficient manner. Now, when you ask your accountant or lawyer to do that, they're required to produce one particular document, which is known as the constitution of the company. And if you're establishing a trust, the trust deed. And then also, if you have a little bit of forethought, or there are more than one, it's more than a sole shareholder that's involved in the company or the trust, you may also have a shareholder's deed that governs the shareholder arrangements under that corporate structure. Typically, what will happen is once you've engaged your lawyer or accountant to prepare that corporate structure and the business ownership structure, they will produce for you standardized documentation, including the constitution and the shareholders agreement. And while that is typically sufficient, it won't be looked at from your particular circumstance unless you instruct your accountant or lawyer to do so. And that can have unexpected consequences in the succession planning for your business and perhaps not reflect your intentions.
Yes, I think that is right because I have a lot of people that come to me say, "Oh, I have a business," or I'm in control of a trust, and they don't even know that they have a company constitution, let alone know what's in it. But as you say, it's really that starting point where you have to think about what I'm going to do. And I guess the next question, which I think I know the answer, but how easy is it to amend these documents so that once you've actually had to think about the succession planning, you can update them to ensure that it reflects your wishes.
Yeah, absolutely. So typically constitutions will require by their nature a 75% special resolution of shareholders or members of the company to facilitate the amendment. And ordinarily for shareholders agreements, they're a bit simpler and a bit more flexible to amend. Typically the constitutions aren't something that we would focus on, particularly from a business succession planning point of view, because the constitutions really establish, and the nature of them and their purpose are to establish the governance rules recognized by law, and things like how are directors appointed, how are shareholders meetings put together, what are the voting rights, and what are the company's particular dividend policies. As distinct from what we're thinking of here in the context of business succession planning, a shareholders agreement, which will be considering more intricately things of really relevant importance to the succession planning of a business. And there's a few things in those shareholders agreements which I think people will be well place to have a think about and turn their mind to how they want particular circumstances to unfold in the event of an untimely passing away or total permanent disability as well.
Yes, because when I talk about shareholders agreements with people, things that they haven't thought about, and you tell me if you've thought of other things, are what it looks like if children are going to step into a business. What does that shareholding look like? What does the control look like? A lot of people, if the shareholder, joint shareholder, I will not, they won't be joint, but if the other shareholder, sorry, is not a family, what that looks like in terms of a younger generation coming in as well. And these are really for businesses that are ongoing. But I also see lots of families where brothers might have come together to invest in property or done some property development. They've got a trust altogether, but they've not really thought about the impact that children might have. What are you seeing day to day in terms of shareholders' agreements and things that kind of don't align with people's, succession?
Yeah, some great points, Lydia, and I think they are really it really sort of leads well into some things that I think the listeners should consider when they own a business. And the first is really builds from that foundation of the first thing that you mentioned, which was a family business that is passing on the business within and down to members of the family, which may and probably is quite different to an arrangement where you are entering into a business arrangement with business partners or third parties or colleagues or a small investor pool who are going to be partners and shareholders and co-directors of your organization versus that familial structure of a company business. Why is that important? Well, it's really good to consider it from the context of if you yourself are in business with somebody with a third party who is not a family member, and if that third party or business partner was to unfortunately pass away, then how would you like that business to be managed going forward? And as your listeners would be aware, the ordinary course would be that the in the absence of any other arrangements, would be that the business shares would transfer through the estate
Right.
into the beneficiary's hands.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a situation that I encounter quite commonly with my clients, and it is quite a difficult thing to rectify if that's not the intended outcome of the business owners from the outset. That's a problem because quite often, people may get into business together, and they're aligned because they've got professional experience along the similar professional levels of experience. However, a beneficiary under an estate may not have that same level of experience and not be able to be an equal partner as to the original shareholder in the transaction or sorry, in the arrangement of the company, and that can leave the first shareholder feeling very disempowered about how they control the business going forward. There are some ways and tips to manage that, and this is what I would suggest and I recommend to all of my clients in this scenario, is that they firstly turn their minds to that possibility as an ownership group, and make a decision about how they intend, outside of their general wills and estate planning process, how they intend to continue to operate the business. Of course, an excellent wills and estates lawyer would ask them that question as well.
That's right. And I guess the other thing that I see, which I think is also a really, you need to sort this out sooner rather than later, is people will come to me and say, well, my kids aren't interested in the business, but the general manager is, and I would like to offer that person a share of the business at some point and how that looks. So I think people think that it can be very simple, as you say, and then, you might have issues with beneficiaries receiving shares and then, inadvertently controlling companies that they may not know anything about. It's really a conversation that needs to happen early and you really need to think it through. The other thing I would say also is that business succession is not a one and done. I mean, we're both in business, changes constantly. What we thought was happening last year is not happening this year. So it's something that you really need to revisit. Who's the best person to revisit it with, do you think? Like accountants or your lawyer or both? Maybe both.
I do think it's both. I think your accountants are people that business owners trust, and they are their usual first port of call with respect to structure, company structure and planning. And then if you've got a good accountant, they should be referring you to a lawyer to advise you on the appropriate way to help document the preferred arrangements. And one of those such documents that I really push strongly with my clients is called a buy-sell agreement. And that covers the scenario whereby there's two partners, and the wishes of the partners are that the on the event of the passing away of the other partner, they would have the first and ultimate right to acquire the shares of the deceased partner. And that document is very, if well drafted and properly drafted, and you do definitely need legal advice for this, it binds the estate of the deceased partner. The other aspect to that is fundamentally the most attractive aspect is there are insurers in the marketplace that will offer conjunctive buy-sell insurance. So, yes. So the insurer, so if you have it properly established and drafted, you'll have a buy-sell agreement that sits with buy-sell insurance, and that insurance will be for the agreed valuation of the company. And on the untimely event of a passing away of a shareholder, that insurance will respond, and it is it. So the company is actually the policy holder.
So like a life insurance policy for the
It,
shares?
correct. It is actually a life insurance. It's a form of life insurance policy.
Oh, how cool is that?
It is very cool, and it's very, very. It's a not well known, not necessarily very well known product, but a but it. But once clients become aware of it, it's a very attractive product because it's a legitimate business expense. You're not paying for the life insurance product as an individual, or you can, well, you can choose to do that, of course. But this is a product held by the company, and it typically will insure each of the shareholders where there's a small, share pool, so three or four maximum. And otherwise, it gets very expensive, as you can appreciate. But it's all for an agreed valuation, market value typically. And then the insurance will respond to the claimant, surviving shareholder, who will then purchase the shares of the from the beneficiaries of the estate with the insurance proceeds.
Huh, that's really cool.
It
That's such a good
is.
idea.
Pardon me.
It's such a good idea, particularly when you have, the shareholdings with people that are, third parties or outside families, because valuing a company in many respects, and I'm sure we've both been involved in many a dispute about share valuations, is a really big one. And I guess for lots of business owners, it would be on their mind, can we afford, at the time of death to buy the shares? That's such a cool idea.
It is a really useful idea, probably a bit underutilized still in the market, and no one loses out because, as you say, if you in the absence of that insurance, then it is, even if you have a buy sell agreement in place, then it's still up to the shareholders to fund the acquisition of the deceased estate's shareholding, which obviously you hope is a valuable asset from the beneficiaries. And the absence of doing that, then the beneficiaries become shareholders, and potentially, if they have enough of a shareholding, they have a right to be appointed as a director, and all sorts of things, and maybe unintended consequences flow from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's so interesting. So what about, let's just say someone has a restaurant, for example. They're the sole director, sole proprietor, and they, that person passes, their, let's say, partner inherits and goes, "Oh, I don't want this business anymore. Let's sell it." Okay? What is the general, because I guess this is interesting for people anyway. What's the general process to sell a business? And when you're in that position where you don't know a lot about the business, yourself, how would you go about that?
It's a good question, and unfortunately, it's a scenario that I've seen occur. So it's the first thing is ensuring when you are a business owner that you appropriately plan through your plan executor how you will take control and can make the executor can make decisions on your behalf with respect to assets such and liabilities such as a business and a lease, and that person will then have to deal with the assets of the business and the lease documentation and the lessor. And I've often found that if that lineage of responsibility isn't clearly articulated in the documentation, then it can prolong the length of time taken to affect the requirements of the estate. And in extreme circumstances, it can require a court order to deal with the assets of the estate, which
Absolutely.
is a very, very expensive and complex undertaking for anyone, but particularly anyone who at the same time is trying to keep a business alive and also manage an estate in that part of the estate management process. So first thing is check your documentation, work with your wills and estate lawyer to ensure that, well, if you're a business owner, that all those proceeds, processes and steps are well established and clear in the documentation to ensure there's appropriate level of control that your executor can administer the business assets and lease documentation appropriately. And once you've got that in place, you're 90% of the way there, because then you're really just stepping into the shoes of the owner and going through the ordinary sale process. And I have two recommendations about that. And you use the example of a restaurant. I think you would look to expertise of brokers who operate in the hospitality industry to facilitate your sale, because like selling a house, it's always beneficial to look to the agents who have good industry contacts and knowledge, and it will save you a lot of time weeding out the inevitable time wasters that are there and tire kickers that are looking at the business without the pre-qualification steps that a broker would take. And then the second thing is having engaging with, and you can do that at any stage, and I recommend this to people too. Engage with your lawyer, a trusted business sale lawyer who has had plenty of experience in business sales, and somebody who knows what they're doing that can help you quickly and efficiently. Because it's like everything, I guess. There's not every lawyer out there has got experience or deep experience in business sales, and the more experienced operator that you have, the quicker and more efficient and the less your costs will be to manage that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. I may have dabbled in some business purchases and stuff. Never again. So I'm very happy to. Here you go, Scott. Take
Well,
the
if I do recall correctly, you were quite good at it, and your clients came back for multiple repeat business opportunities.
They did. They did. And I was just thinking, about one other thing that people really need to think about, and something that I frantically threw at you before I had my third cesarean, which was a company power of attorney as well. So I offer it to all my clients that have a company that's essentially running a day-to-day business, paying employees, doing payroll, that kind of stuff. A company power of attorney, whereby you appoint someone to step in as director in circumstances where you are incapacitated or unavailable for some reason. So you're alive, but you just can't run it. And the real benefit I see for that is for people that do, need to access bank accounts, have payroll, even I guess like tax obligations and the like. Company power of attorneys are really important. If you are a director of a, what are we? An incorporated legal practice in Queensland, even more important because you have to have a legal practitioner director within, I think it's 7 days of one being unavailable or removed or something, which is why Scott is one of my attorneys. Thanks, Scott. So I think that's important. Now, before we wrap up, anything else that you want to say about succession planning for business?
Yeah, I think one of the other like so thinking back to our shareholders agreement, a couple of things to think about at the early onset of when you are establishing a business, and this is in the context of you have other shareholder owners of the company that in which you're operating, is that there are probably three main clauses that I'd like people to think about in this context of succession planning. Is the first one is the tag along rights, and people may have heard that expression before. Effectively, what tag along rights do is they require a minority to join the majority of shareholders in a sale. So that's in the context of there might be seven shareholders. Let's say for the purpose of this discussion, they have one share each. Five shareholders wish to sell, then those five shareholders can force the remaining two to sell their shares so that the company can be sold as a package. So that's an important one to look at the outset of a company, creation of a company, establishment of a company, and what your intentions are, because it can, if you're not aligned or you don't have that right within your shareholders agreement, then that can really limit the liquidity and exit available opportunity to exit the company if not all shareholders are aligned on potential sale. That's the first one. The second one is a drag along rights. So that is where, oh, sorry, the first one I was referring to was tag along, but that was actually drag along. And then the final one to consider is always looking at liquidity and exit. So thinking about how we may like to exit the
Yes.
company and how our shares can be liquidated in the scenario that it's time to move on and sell your assets.
And I guess that really comes back to if you don't understand your documents, you need to consult somebody that does, that can explain it to you. And if your wishes are not accurately recorded, those documents need to be amended. Okay. It's not the end of the world, but you have to have a think about it. You have to understand and have a good review of what you've got in place so that once you do pass, your loved ones aren't essentially left with a mess. Right. And because, we're business owners, you work hard, you work very hard, and you should receive the benefit of that, or your family should, after you pass. So that's why it's important, I think, to have everything in place.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that, Lydia, to say it you don't have to have some sort of specialist knowledge in corporations law to contemplate and think about what kind of arrangements you would like in place
Oh,
when you
absolutely.
set
Yeah.
up a company. And it can be those little thought bubbles that you articulate to your accountant or your lawyer when you are creating the company to say, if I were to pass away, I'd like this to happen. If my partner were to pass away, I'd like that to happen. If the company was to be offered a big buyout, I would like everyone to be able to be forced to come along with that buyout, or I don't want everyone to be able to be forced to come along to that buyout. So whatever the decision-making process is, just spare yourself 15, 20 minutes to actually have some of those thoughts and articulate that to your advisor, and that can easily be amended and wrapped into your shareholders agreement from the outset of the establishing your company and saving you a lot of other trouble down the line. So I guess that's the take home message for me is that whilst those documents are generally almost uniformly treated as precedent off the shelf documents, they perhaps shouldn't be.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Scott, for being my guest today. I have really appreciated it. I think we're wrapping up with one more week talking about business succession planning. But otherwise, that's it from us this week. Thanks, Scott. Thanks
Thanks
again.
for having
Thanks for
me.
teaching me something.
That's
You always
okay.
do, but it's good.
Thanks to you. Thanks, listeners.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, visit www.vicarlaw.com.au to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.